And welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and also YouTube, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher. Nicole, we had a big spike on Spotify this week. So all Did the we? Other podcast catchers. It's Dark Mark. I'm the goth comedian. It's Dark Mark Show. And here's my co-host, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Yay. Hello, Mark. I'm excited for today's show.
Well, I am too, because we rarely have this type of freewheeling conversation before we started. We're starting like 20 minutes late because we were just talking, and I haven't even asked a question yet. And we have three people that are in the industry here in Hollywood that have a new show on my favorite streaming site. You know that. You know what that is, Nicole.
Renegade Radio?
No. That would be an internet radio site. Tubi.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
You
know how many times I've said Tubi rules? Inside Mark.
What?
You know how many times I've said Tubi rules on this show?
Oh, yeah. You love Tubi.
I love Tubi. They have so many great movies. And they also have a TV show now, Stars, Stunts, and Action.
Ooh.
And we have three of the hosts of Stars, Stunts, and Action. First, we have as they say on the show, former bodyguard, bounty hunter, and he's addicted to action. James Houston.
Yo. Glad to be
Hi,
here.
Hi, James.
Hey. Thanks for having us on.
No, thanks for joining us. And we also have, this is the guy who contacted me and set this up, and I really appreciate it. As they say on the show, he's an exotic weapons expert. He's an action junkie. He's a movie guru. He's also an author, and he's also a stuntman, and he's got so many great stories. And great hair, Jason McNeil.
Why, thank you. Oh, flattery will get you everywhere. Anyway, introduce the other guy, and then I want to talk.
Whipping out the hair. Okay, well, the other guy, even though it says the armorer on his Zoom, this man has been making movies. Of all the hosts of Star Stunts Action, he is likely the most accomplished. He was nominated for a SAG Award for Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. He's been in everything from Star Trek, Masters of the Universe, Roadhouse, Three Musketeers, everything. It's Anthony DeLongis. And I keep mispronouncing his name, and he's a tough guy, and he's going to beat me up. Anthony DeLongis.
There you go.
Anthony.
Hi.
You're very quiet all of a sudden.
I'll interrupt in just a moment, so
okay.
Don't get used to it.
So we better do our sponsors real quick, and we've got some great sponsors. Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/DMS. You can get any book, and they have all sorts of books on stunts, action movies, and one of your guests, Danny Trejo, his autobiography is on Audible. You can get that or any book, and you have access to hundreds of Audible originals for free. Just go to audibletrial.com/DMS and you get a 30-day trial. You can cancel the next day, but you keep the book. You keep the Audible originals that you downloaded. It's a great deal. It's free. Take advantage of it, people. And you can get all sorts of action books. Speaking of action, I just listened to the book by Rob Halford, the lead singer of Judas Priest, and there's all sorts of action. Not exactly in the star stunts and action realm, but interesting action nonetheless. But whatever you want. They've got everything from Shakespeare to Smut. And Nicole, can't wait to take you to Doomies again. Doomies Home Cooking.
I can't wait. I'm actually vegetarian right now. I decided to go vegetarian again for a little while. I do it like once a year just to clean out my body. And Doomies is some of the best vegan cooking there is.
Yes. Yeah, so Star Stunts in Action, guys. I know you're going vegan, ha. But you would love this place. They've got everything. You would never know it's vegan. They have pulled pork sandwiches, shrimp po' boys, chicken cordon bleu. The nachos were listed one of the 10 best nachos in L.A. by the L.A. Weekly. The only one without meat. 1253 Vine Street in Hollywood. They have a restaurant in Culver City. They also have a restaurant in Toronto, Canada.
What's it called?
It's called Doomies Home Cooking. Doomies. Doomies
we'll
Home Cooking.
Check it out.
Sure. Oh, it's great. I trust me. Get the Big Mac off the secret menu.
I lived in Hollywood, from the Hollywood Bowl for 18 years. And but I guess it's some, it's been there since I moved out here. We've been out here. This is our 19th year at Rancho Andalo. We're top of the mountain, two hills over from Vasquez Rocks, which is where Kirk battled the Gorn. And when I played Maj Kulla on Star Trek Voyager, I, you know, stole Voyager and marooned the crew there. And I've shot there a lot of times over the years. It's also Planet Vulcan for, you know, the people in your audience who like that sort of thing.
So your ranch was used on Star Trek. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I did a shoot there myself. I was a Vulcan. Back then I had the bangs and I looked just like a Vulcan when they cut my hair to here.
Well, I don't think your makeup as long as I was. Did you ever see Star Trek Voyager?
Yeah.
My character was Maj Kulla, and, you know, our favorite episode was the Seska, you know, who had deserted the crew and hooked up with me. She would go, "Yes, Maj." You know,
which, by the way, Anthony makes us say that all the time.
I'll bet.
Yes, Maj.
Well,
he has his ways to do that.
What you usually say to me is, "Oh my,
yeah,
George Decay."
Well, I guess we better start. By the way, our other sponsor is Raise Energy Drink. I'm gonna get one right now because I need this to keep up with you guys.
Oh, I was 3.5 hours into makeup and an hour out, so that was.
I'm gonna ask what that is in just a second, but Raise Energy Drink, zero carbs, zero calories, zero crash. Look in the description in the show on podcast catchers or YouTube, and you get 15% off a case. I just got a case of Baja Lime. Tastes like Baja Blast at Taco Bell.
Oh, with no sugar.
No sugar.
You know, if you want calories, to force this no stuff, crack. You got to send us some.
We'll put it on camera. I would love to.
Product placement.
Now, Anthony, what is it like to be in a makeup room, makeup chair for 3 hours?
Long kind of
TV. Ask Jason.
Jason, you were in the makeup chair for 3 hours for this show, or
no. Well, I don't know if professional drag counts is what we're talking about. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, come on, you don't take nearly that long for that.
Anthony, tell them about. Don't you? Wasn't Maj Kulla some sort of sponge head thing? Well, I think I saw it when I was in Vegas. They had it in a display case.
It was definitely a high profile vehicle. I had asked them because, you know, I said, is this, or, you know, when the character first appeared, I said, is this organic or is this tribal? Because they started introducing a couple of other characters whose hair was slightly differently. Being the leader, though, I had the biggest hair. And I used to have to, as I would walk up, you know, on the bridge of Voyager, I'd have to subtly bend my knees so that I could actually get through the door when it went, goosh. That Star Trek sound. So that was kind of funny. And then when we were out at Vasquez Rocks, the wind was blowing and it was kind of like, ooh, I felt like a little bit like Harold Lloyd, you know, in the hurricane. I'd have to lean into it because it had some wind resistance.
Wow. On top of everything, you gotta balance your head.
We've known each other a long time. I knew James when he had hair.
Well, if you watch the show, Star Stunts in Action.
Jason used to, you know, his hair, he was, his nickname was Fabio, although he was much handsomer. But, you know, before a take, he would do the whole thing that, Nicole could do so much better. But anyway, with the spray, and we had to keep him away from open flames, basically.
James, when did you have long hair?
Me? I've never had long hair.
Okay, you're talking about Jason then.
Yeah, he's talking about Jason, yeah.
Oh, Jason, because that's a running joke on the Star Stunts in Action.
Has your hair grown back out again? Jason, is your hair
grown
back
out again?
Yeah, he's got the long hair.
Yes. That's how long it's been since I've seen you.
Well, it's
it's like you, for the show to come back live. You got the show hair.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
We haven't seen each other in a while.
Yes, it's totally intentional. It's not just because I've been too lazy to get it cut, what with quarantine and all. Actually, the last time I had it cut was I was in all right, Mark, I'm curious. Have you seen Danzig's movie Verotica?
I've heard of it. I have not seen it yet.
I'm in it in one scene. And the last time that I Oh, well, the one thing that he was obsessed with was he would wanted it to look just like the comic book page. He was adapting that from one of his comic books. And the guy that I was playing had comic book colored yellow hair. So they took me into the thing and bleached it some god-awful something and cut it a certain way. And I that was the last time I had it cut. But yes, it was a very exciting platinum blonde. And I've just let it go since then. Like I said, during quarantine, we were all doing weird facial hair things and letting it go. So here right. I am.
Well, Jason, you as I say on the show, you get a little flack from the guys for being kind of a pretty boy and a flirt and everything else. And but what these guys know and what other people don't is that you are a legitimate martial artist. Not a matter of fact, you've written for Black Belt Magazine for quite some time. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, I was talking to the editor of Black Belt. We were emailing back and forth this morning. But it's the way that we started doing the show, actually. It's funny that you mentioned this. Damn it, I had this whole thing I wanted to ask you about your last episode. But we'll come back to that. The way that this show came about was this is the on-camera version of what I was doing as a magazine and newspaper features writer. I just sort of fell into doing entertainment writing, and I would go to, what's Anthony doing? And I'd be backstage at a rock concert, or I'd be at a movie theater. I'd be at a movie shoot or whatever we were doing. And I don't do well just sitting and watching. I wanted to participate. Right. So, you know, if somebody's driving a stunt car, oh, show me how, I want to do that. You know, or if I'm, you know, backstage with Motley Crue and there's groupies, I'm like, hey, I want to do that. But so I'm very participatory. So James had been planning, James had done a couple of TV pilots, and James and I have the same Kung Fu teacher. We trained with Sifu Simon and Sifu Simon Kwong in Radford. And it was Chinese New Year, and we were slamming back some Cobra whiskey or something. And I sort of drunkenly looked over and I was like, so what does it take to do a TV show anyway? And we put our heads together, and once we're sober, and this is basically what you see in Star Stunts Action is entertainment writing, but it's participatory. Thank you, speech therapists. So that's how it happened. It's just the on-camera version of what I was doing back then. So
that's what I like about it.
I'm sorry, go on.
I said, that's what I like about it. I was watching it. I'm like, why didn't somebody think of this before? This is great.
Seems obvious to me.
Yeah, ahead, and James. It was really interesting because one of the first things we lined up was the interview with Anthony, and you know, and we had all checked out his stuff, and we were like, man, this guy's been in everything, and he's a legit martial artist and stunt guy and actor, and he's just been all over the industry. And so we went up to interview him, and we were like, this is a great find, you know, this guy. And we immediately, you know, just fell in love with Anthony and Mary and the ranch, and you know, what he was doing for training actors was really interesting and unique and such a powerful resource. And we were like, man, if there's any way we can get him to be part of our shenanigans, we should definitely do that. and he was kind enough to you know, have some interest in what we were doing. And then he opened up a world of stuff to us. And over the years, we've had lots of fun just, you know, not only shooting the show, but, also just getting to know each other and doing martial arts together and just making a good time out of it. And I think that's what comes across on camera, is we're legitimately having a good time.
That's right. Always.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Nicole.
Oh, I was just saying that's always the best kind of show, the kind that flows organically and you can tell people are having fun.
All right. Can I tell about the first trip up there, James?
Go for it.
Okay, cool. All right. So we're heading up the mountain. The way we met Anthony was sort of by accident. I got in touch with, I reached out to like six of the Highlander guys, and Anthony was the only one who got back to me. And he was nice enough. He invited us up to his ranch, you know, come up and we'll film and whatever. And so I knew him from Highlander. I knew, you know, everybody knows, oh, you know, he was a guy with a knife in his boot, Roadhouse and all this. We're headed up the mountain. Anthony has about a 3.5 mile unpaved road. You have to work your way up. And while we're going, while I'm looking at his resume, I see literally 10 minutes from his house that he was in a film called Circle of Iron with David Carradine, which was my favorite movie in high school. It was originally supposed to be a Bruce Lee thing, and it went through a couple of permutations. Ended up, they filmed it starring David Carradine and a fellow named Jeff Cooper, and Anthony was one of the main characters in it. His name was Morthant. And so we're heading up the mountain, and I'm like, oh my God, he was in Circle of Iron. And the, you know, the producer and I were driving, and they're like, what are you talking about? I said, monkeys, the first trial. And the producer looked back and said, are you having a stroke? And I was just nerding out, bouncing up and down, because my favorite movie in high school, this guy was in. And so we get up there and we set up the camera and everything, and we start asking interview questions, and I ask him one or two Highlander questions. And I immediately, with no warning, segue into, I'm asking him all these very specific questions about a film that he did in, what was it, 1980, Anthony? I was just like, so anyway, when you shot this one scene in Circle of Iron, when you were doubling for this, and I understand that David Carradine was using this double front kick and you did a different one, and he was just sort of taking it in stride. And he was like, well, as best I recall, and then he just continued, but he totally indulged my
fanboy crush.
Max nerming out. Fanboy crush. There you go.
Face, didn't it? Very good.
Yeah. And it was like when somebody knows more about what you did than you when you did it.
Well, not really, but it was my first feature. I got to travel to Israel, so it was exotic. It was on location. I was traveling. I was a lowly brown belt at the time, and I was traveling with every martial artist I had ever heard of. Was on that plane. And we got there. It was the first time I'd worked with David. I worked with David there. And then I met Joe Lewis, who was, world heavyweight karate champion and a student of Bruce Lee's, and, an incredible martial artist and a really nice guy. And he asked me if I wanted to play the bad guy in his film called Jaguar Lives. And it had John Huston, and I fanboyed over John Huston big time. I told that story a few times, but it had John Huston and Donald Pleasance and Christopher Lee and Joe Weissman and Barbara Bach and Woody Strode, and we were all over Israel, and it was cool. And then with Joe, we went to Spain, and I got to do that. I ended up working with David in Israel, and then Argentina, and then up to Canada for a picture called The Warrior and the Sorceress, and then into Canada for Kung Fu, The Legend Continues. James Hong was on that, and I've been a big fan of James Hong for years.
Right.
But I've actually worked in one capacity or another on both sides of the camera in 13 countries on 5 continents, and 11 of them from the back of a horse, which... was a big time dream of mine, as a kid. And then I wanted to take my weapon skills up on the horseback. I didn't really get to do it until I started in my late 30s. And then 31 years later, I've been on horseback in 11 countries on 5 continents. So dreams can come true. Sometimes they just take a while.
Right. That's really cool. Like, that is really cool.
And where do you see this ranch, Nicole? But any good David Carradine stories? I met him once, and he was a
Here you go.
Oh, okay, my gosh.
I wanted to excite Jason, so I knew that would do it. Go ahead.
No, here we go. You know where I'm going with this. Okay.
I love working with David, and we got on really well. David was one of the smartest guys I'd ever run across. If he wanted to talk to you. If he didn't, you may as well, talk to a bush or a brick wall, because he'd just ignore you. And no one could ignore you quite like David, but we got on real well. He liked what I was doing. He asked me if I would also be in this other scene that introduces his blind seer flute playing character. That it was a bamboo flute that he had carved himself, because that's very much David. And the first shot is him walking barefoot. He was always barefoot. And he had a toe ring on, and the director did this thing where you see feet and then it's like a close up on a stair with his toe ring. And, that was all kind of fun.
Okay. Let me interrupt. Let me set this up, because you know where I'm going with this. Don't look at me.
Here
like
we
that.
Go.
You know
here
where we're going.
Marty McDowell tried to pick
here
me up.
Here we go.
No, 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 no. So, true story. Have you guys read, I doubt you have. Carradine wrote a couple of books. The first one was called Spirit of Shaolin. It was his, it's kind of silly. It's kind of entertaining. It's a combination of martial arts and behind the scenes of his film career, right? So 3 a.m, I'm laying there, I'm reading this book. And I get to the chapter, and there is an entire chapter in this book where David Carradine describes his death match in Argentina with Anthony DeLongis. And where he was, had gotten angry because Anthony had done something to his friend, Jeff Cooper, who was the star of Circle of Iron. He played Cord the Seeker, and he wanted to get his revenge. So when he found out Anthony was going to be on this film, he started asking the people in Argentina, would I get in trouble legally if I challenged someone to a death match and fought them in Argentina? And they said, in Argentina, no, you can get away with that. So I confronted Anthony and we had our match. And we had, and then I'm like, oh my dear God. And normally I would not do this. I mean, I'm a night owl, but I called Anthony, woke his ass up at 3 a.m. And I'm like, you have to tell me about your death match in Argentina with David Carradine, because I just read an entire chapter about it. And now here's the other side of the story. Anthony, you want to tell about your death match with David Carradine?
As good as the toe ring story was.
Yeah, that's no, the death match. Sorry, that was just an aside that I haven't thought about in years. But we were on great locations in Israel, and that was all well and good. But now we're down in Argentina. And what had happened was, we had all of these martial artists, but there was no one coordinating. There's no stunt coordinating. Cam Ewan was there working with David because he was David's sensei for a number of years. But no one was reining in all of these martial artists. So they all wanted to do their own thing. And word came back that the action looks crappy and tell people, you know, they got to go harder and get closer and this and that. So somebody who was, you know, sort of acting as pseudo coordinator says, well, all right, well, we'll do this little thing with, Jeff real quick, you know, no rehearsal or any, and throw an elbow. So, you know, so we do this little combination and I'm going to throw an elbow. And when I was young then, and I wasn't good enough to be able to not only protect myself, but protect everybody else, no matter what they do. And when someone forgets what they're doing, like when I teach weapons work, I say, when someone forgets choreography, they're going to attack your head. So I teach people parries that actually work and will protect you. In this, I am ready to throw this elbow and I start to throw it and I watch Jeff's eyes glaze over and he sticks his face right into the path of the elbow. I pull it as best I can. I barely brushed him. It felt like a hair touching my elbow, but he hit the deck and went down and it cut the inside of his mouth. And, it was an accident. And, I felt terrible about it. And I kind of went, I'm going to have to train harder so that, you know, and I learned a lesson. I've never hurt anybody since. And I don't let anybody hurt me either. That's part of working in the business. So I get down to Argentina and I find out that, actually it's very funny because I said, when I went to read for the part, I said, oh, mysterious stranger pits the forces of evil against each other. This is very Yojimbo, which is a Kurosawa film, which part of what got me into choreography many years ago. And the director goes, well, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going, oh, this should be a red flag. But, so we get down there and there's David and he says, okay, well, we'll go out and we'll do some training because I'm going to, Dave doesn't know anything about swords really. And so I was going to, give him some foundational stuff so that we could put some stuff together. And David's having his wardrobe fitting. Well, David being David has gone commando. So he's standing there in Captain Morgan pose while the poor old, older lady who was, the wardrobe lady for in Argentina is like, trying not to go blind. And then he comes outside and we have this little area and it's kind of got some trees and stuff on it. And suddenly he comes running at me with one of his jumping, front kicks, and I just back up because I see it coming. But behind me, there's a tree that's about this big around. So I couldn't see it peripherally. And he runs my tailbone into it. And I went, and he very quickly decides, he says, oh, that was an accident. You don't have a mean bone in your body. And I'm sorry. And I'm kind of going, couldn't we have figured this out before you ran me into that tree? Because, I had to look around for, you know, a few days before I was back. But I ended up doing that, and we fought, and David had an accident and broke his hand. And so we ended up having to shift everything over to his left hand, which was interesting because he got a big cast on his right hand. So we turned that into his war fist. And I also ended up doubling on it because I could duplicate his movement. So there's a bunch of scenes where whenever he's in his hoodie, it's actually me. So, you know, I like to stay busy when I'm out on location because there's nothing else to do. So that's those. There's a couple of David stories. There's more.
Was that the deathmatch story, Jason?
Yes, that was the deathmatch. He apparently David, in the book, it's this very elaborate. He had this whole buildup for weeks, and then they fought their deathmatch, and they became friends. And according to Anthony, he was like, he came running and did a double front kick, and I backed up and broke my ass bone, and then we were friends. So yeah, it's interesting.
Just like a John Ford movie. You have a fight, like in the St. Paddy Day is coming up, so we'll watch The Quiet Man again and Waking Ned Devine, and you know, that's... beverages. It would be marvelous. But
I do appreciate Anthony working in male nudity into that one. But Jason, I have to ask because
the visuals. Well, you know, it's important to paint a picture.
It is.
I just remember the poor the poor lady. Well, when I was talking to David when we first met, he got to like me and he got to telling me stories, and one of them was about he got invited to join the. It's the Edwin Booth. It's a kind of a private club for actors only in New York. And it was founded by Edwin Booth. And it was, you know, his apartment and, you know, I guess certain select. I got to visit once. I got invited by after the fact. But he said he's telling me, you know, and he's painting the picture being David. He's in his big buffalo skin coat, you know, and he's got his dog Bear with him, you know, who is an enormous dog and hence the name. And he comes into this very private club, and I guess Bear got a little excited and Bear crapped on the floor, you know, and somebody started getting all, oh, we can't have dogs in here and this and that. And David being David reaches down and scoops it up with his hand and kicks open the door to the bathroom and then throws it into this urinal right next to a guy who's, you know, there to pee, you know, and apparently the guy went, that's what we need here. More young blood. that story really sums up David. He came to see me when I was doing Rashomon at the El Globe in San Diego. And that was, we were talking about trying to do Royal Hunt of the Sun. And he was going to play Atahualpa, which he'd played on Broadway. But alas, we never got to do that one together.
Right. And we have won awards. Jason, I was going to say, bringing it back to the show, and this is related, because you guys interviewed, among all the stars that you interviewed, including Martin Cove from Cobra Kai, Michael Madsen, Danny Trejo, Bai Ling, you interviewed, the last show, you interviewed Gene LaBelle, Judo Gene LaBelle, and Nicole, and some of the people that don't know. He's been a stunt guy in movies since The Green Hornet. He was sparring with Bruce Lee. He trained with Bruce Lee till, I mean, he was training Ronda Rousey for the UFC. That's as long as he goes. I mean, he's been in the industry so long. And I was waiting for you to ask him about, you know where I'm going, Jason, because he choked you out.
Okay. Well, yes. Why don't you set it up and then I'll.
first I want to say, watch the show because
everyone knows what we're talking about right now. Yes. I will say this. I had heard the rumor too. Okay. The rumor is, and I can neither confirm nor deny, that Steven Seagal was acting. Yeah. And that's the thing, which leads me to, I would normally just blow it off, but the fact that Gene is a gentleman and will neither confirm nor deny.
He never talks about it. Nicole. Steven Seagal,
we're all talking around this.
Apparently was a little too rough on the stuntman and was hitting him for real. And this is in his career. And Gene LaBelle, who's been doing stunts and movies forever, apparently told him to knock it off or confront him about it. And then Steven Seagal's like, I've heard about you. There's no way you can choke me out.
Okay.
The story is, and Gene LaBelle doesn't actually, he never says this, but other people have said it, that he choked him out And, you know, as sometimes happens when you get choked out, Steven Seagal shit his pants.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
now, Jason, you did not shit your pants when Gene LaBelle choked you out.
I did not. Like I said, I cannot. Everyone's heard that story. I can neither confirm nor deny the Seagal thing. However, I had heard it too. So, well, actually, there's two parts to this. When I volunteered for that, they needed someone to choke him out, and I'm like, all right, sure, you know, I'll volunteer. Yes, they. I did go make sure that I went and relieve myself beforehand because I had heard what other people had talked about. Oh. I've heard various versions of it that he pooped himself, that he pissed himself, whatever. I said, sure, just give me a minute. I'll be right back. And I hit the head. That having been said, that was kind of surprising. James and I, our Kung Fu teacher that I mentioned, taught me a Qigong technique, which is like the body hardening where you punch cinder blocks and they hit you with sticks and all that. He had taught me neck gong, where I can make my neck kind of swell up, and it's very, very hard to choke me. No one had ever been able to successfully choke me out. Henzo Gracie tried once, and Henzo couldn't choke me out. So I was all like, "Oh, sure, whatever. I'll volunteer." And Gene gets and he settles in, and if you watch it happen, you know, I kind of puff my neck up, and Gene's back there, and he's like whispering to me the whole time, and he's got that old gruff voice, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going out. It's like, this guy knows what he's doing. And next thing you know, I'm laying on my back, you know, because you don't remember being choked out. Right. It's just 1 minute, Gene's got his, you know, he's got his grip and you're tapping. And next thing you know, there's a 70-some-year-old man damn near teabagging you, squatting over you, smacking your face, going, tell me, what did you dream of? I'm like, oh my dear God, I was choked out. So well, Gene's the only person who has ever successfully been able to do that to me. But that having been said, I'm in good company. Yeah. I can neither confirm nor deny that, but he did choke out Superman once.
But the best part of him being choked out.
For Reeve or actual Superman?
Out, he said, what did you dream of? And, you know, unrehearsed, you know, Jason said, old, fat, redheaded women.
And you said that when you choked out? Funny. Unconscious?
What?
He said that when he was unconscious.
Yeah, he asked me what I dreamed
about. No, but he had asked what he dreamed about.
Oh, okay.
When it was regaining consciousness. No, Gene's been doing this long enough, like you said. He's been doing it forever. Back when George Reeves.
Oh, okay.
The Adventures 50s. Of Superman TV, yeah. They did a TV promo thing where he would go around the country and do appearances at state fairs, kind of promoting the show. And Gene went with him. Gene was the villain, Mr. Kryptonite. And they had a whole thing. Yeah, Gene was a pro wrestler as well as a judo guy back in the day. And he was also training George while they were going. And one day George got him in some kind of lock and he was like, ah, what do you do now? What would you do now? What'd you do if I did this? And cranked him a little too hard. He didn't like it. So Gene spun him around and choked him out. And George Superman Reeves wakes up and he's like, you know what? I totally deserve that. You know, I apologize. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God, he choked out Superman.
He's an amazing guy. I mean, he was doing stunts in Superman in the 50s and training Ronda Rousey's in the 2010s. It's amazing.
Well, here's a quick story for you. It's from his book, The Toughest Man Alive. You know who Jim Brown was, right?
Oh yeah, Jim Brown, the running back. Well, and
just I always look whenever I see the Dirty Dozen, you know, and he does the grenade run at the end, and I just look at him and going, can you imagine being the guy between him and the goal line?
And the a huge him? Guy.
Well, on this, the coordinator, you know, brought Gene in and he introduced him to Jim Brown. And he said, this is Gene LaBelle and you guys are going to wrestle around a little bit, you know, and throw a couple punches. And then he's going to pick you up over his head and he's going to throw you into this wall and you'll land on the couch. And Jim Brown kind of goes, oh. And so they wrestle around and this and that, you know, and the last thing Jim Brown's going to do is let himself get picked up. Well, he got picked up and bounced off the wall and he landed on the couch and he's there looking up at Gene who'd come over to help him up. And he kind of goes, I don't know who you are, but I'm glad you're on my side. That's Gene LaBelle.
Anthony, I was going to ask you, besides David Carradine, have there been other times where actors, I mean, obviously accidents happen, but intentionally did not pull their punch and tried to take a real swing at you? And I would love it if you name names. You don't have to, but what happened?
As a rule, most people aren't mean-spirited. When accidents happen, most people aren't just, they're not as good as they think they are.
Right.
So after that, you know, accident that happened on my first movie, I started, I kept up with my training and I just developed this mantra of, I don't hurt anybody else and I don't let anybody hurt me. So I'm always watching. And like when I did a fight with Josh Brolin in the Gangster Squad. Right. And, the coordinator came up to me and he said, Josh likes to work close. And I go, how close? And he threw this punch and it was like, it just kind of grazed my chin. And I went, oh, okay, thanks. And so whenever I take a reaction, you know, I'll take a reaction and I will stagger a couple of steps. I'll buy myself, 8 to 10 inches more distance so I can see stuff coming. And of course, with all the stuff we do, you learn to recognize angle of attack and this and that. And you have options of, okay, he's forgotten the choreography and now it's every man for himself. But, protect yourself at all times is a good thing. So and I did all that. But the only problem was we were fighting in a hallway in a jail, and he had me back against the wall and I watch him line up and I'm going, ah, shit, boom, I roll with it. And then after the thing, he goes, I got you, didn't I? They went, yeah, where? And I go, it's okay. Yeah. I suck.
Yeah. And James, I didn't want to ignore you because, but I was actually fascinated. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Anthony.
Oh, I was just going to say, David had told me another one of the stories he told me. He said on Kung Fu, I used to do that stuff with the spears and the arrows and I'd brush them aside. Well, I'd let him hit me because they were rubber tipped and they brushed aside. Oh, well, that's a cool secret and a neat story. Thanks. He said, right. Yeah, they told me to hit the stunt guys. I said, the stunt guys like it. And that's one of my pet peeves in the business. It's like, no, stunt guys don't really like it. I like the contact, to give you a reaction. But when you are, I refer to it as verbal dialogue and physical dialogue. Either way, you're telling a story. And it takes two people to tell a really good story. Like, for example, with a simple punch, there's the moment before, there's the action, there's the reaction, there's the moment after. Those are four storytelling opportunities. Most people blow through them, okay? But you just... If you actually hit somebody, now you're not telling your half of the story. You're just trying to survive. And when people do get hit by accident, it never looks right. It always, it just looks weird because you've lost the rhythm of the fight. So I find it both dangerous and insulting to work with people who have that attitude. So
right.
I won't do it.
And that's one of the cool things on the show is it shows you the difference between what would happen in reality and what would happen on film, and things that look good on film that wouldn't necessarily look good. There was Eric Lee actually looked like he kicked the shit out of James, and James came up behind him. Eric Lee is a terrific martial artist, and he comes up, James comes up from behind. He does this like a horizontal kick like this, like boom. And then James pretends like he's getting hit and gets knocked down. Then after they do the whole fight, he's like, if someone came up behind me, that's the last thing I would do. It doesn't make sense. And then he shows what he would do. I thought that was great. And also the guy who did the stunts for Wolverine showed how to move to the camera. It's a very interesting show. And Anthony, you showed in the Western movies. I didn't know this, but it makes sense now because you threw tomahawks. And in the old Western movies, I guess the guys had a block of wood in their back.
Oh, yeah, that's in How the West Was Won. You can actually see they used to do it old school.
Right.
That's scary.
Now, I trained to actually be able to do that. I can take a target out of your hand as we pass at full gallop on horseback with a whip. It's on my reel, which makes shooting it easy. But yeah, that does require a certain dedication, and all three of us, have spent years developing skills that allow us to tell a more interesting story, a more dynamic story, to just make a better product for the audience. But the fact that you are good at something doesn't necessarily mean you can translate that to film. Quick story, when I was doing Fearless with Jet Li, they, Mike Leader, the guy who was responsible for helping cast me there, to draw me. They kept looking for a guy who could do swords and whips. Unfortunately, my name came up. But it was a wonderful time. I had a great time with Jet and with Yan Wu Ping. But they told me the story how they had a guy who was, this champion boxer and he five belts and this and that, right? And his first day on the set, his first scene, he punched Jet Li in the face and broke his nose, which shut down filming for 3 days. And then Jet came back, and the first thing the guy did was punch him in the face again. That's not storytelling. And of course, he was fired.
I would hope so.
Yeah. But one of the fun things with that, I really had to bring my A game working with Jet. There was no rehearsal. They were 5 days behind. So I met them when I walked on set, they started throwing stuff together. The team, I like to evolve choreography. They've worked together so many years, they read each other's minds. And they, as soon as Jet and Yan Wu Ping were happy, Jet and I would get up, we'd walk it once or twice, then we'd shoot it at speed. I think we shot 1-3 takes. Everything else was 2 or less. And then we'd move on and do it all over again. Neither one of us knew the choreography, but between the two of us, we had more than 70 years of martial arts experience. So I would move, he'd adjust.
He improvised the choreography. I'd adjust.
So it's the most organic ever done on film, and it was really cool.
I gotta watch.
And I was old, and I could hang with Jet Li, so I was happy.
Jet Li's awesome.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, I said Jet Li's awesome. Yes, Kiss of the Dragon is
he's
my
really
favorite.
Fast.
What was that? Sorry.
Huh? I said he's really fast.
He's really fast. I believe it. Kiss of the Dragon is like my favorite action film. What?
I agree. Guys,
any other Jet Li stories there, Anthony? By the way, Zoom sucks. I say this every week. Zoom sucks. I hate the delay. Anthony, do you have any other Jet Li stories?
When we walked on, I met him when we walked on set, and the first three moves they had me do, they wanted me to do pokey, pokey, pokey. And I went, oh my God, they think that Western fencing is what they've seen in the movies, which I refer to as a miasma of misinformation with a few rare exceptions. So I wasn't going to do that, but I wasn't also going to have a fight. So I gave them a lunging attack followed by a pass forward and followed by a redoublement, which is sword talk for going. I gave them three thrusts, but I always utilized the weapon the way it would be used combative. I very quickly realized they were having me attack to quadrants. They were choreographing my weapon, which is a European weapon, like it was a Chinese weapon, which they often do. And I just kind of went, okay, I'm going to maintain the, my character wouldn't use his weapon like that, but I will find a way to give them what they want. So they had me attacking to quadrants. It wasn't logical, but I went, okay, you're wanting me to prompt some amazing move that Jet has done thousands of times before, because he's martial arts royalty there, and rightly so. And so I said, okay, I will give you these three attacks. Would you mind if I got there this way? Because it's an easier flow than, what you'd originally said. And apparently somebody said, who's choreographing this? Us or the Guaylo, which is a less than complimentary term for, the white guy. And Wu Ping said, this Guaylo knows what he's doing. And after that, we had no problems. We actually, he was a pleasure to work with. They called me back. And in 2.5 days, I caught them up three of the 5 days they were behind. So
that's awesome.
It's one of my favorite career collaborations.
Not too shabby. Now, James, I'm curious about you, because going down the rabbit hole of IMDb, there's not that much about you. But on the show, and by the way, on the show you had hair, but on the show you had, they describe you as a bodyguard and a bounty hunter.
Would you like?
Yeah.
Is that true? Were you a bodyguard? Were you a bounty hunter?
James.
Yeah.
I know we've been running our mouths. Do you want?
All right. So.
Want to tell it or shall I?
All right. So. Yes.
Tell them about Christmas Eve.
No, that's that.
All right. I'll
come
tell
on, James. Talk to Christmas Eve, please.
All right. So. Okay. All right. So. Yes, it is true. And you know, the term that the preferred term is fugitive recovery agent. And so I was a fugitive recovery agent for a team, U.S. Fugitive Recovery. And so we traveled around and did what you do in that business. And I was a professional bodyguard, and I worked with, I worked with several Playboy models and playmates and other folks. And it was a pretty interesting time, you know, and I started out.
If you're going to guard a body, you might as well guard a Playboy model body.
Yeah, it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it, right? But it was.
No touching.
Yeah, exactly. But it was interesting because. As a martial artist, I wanted an opportunity to utilize what I had learned. And I'd done a lot of competition. I'd done some full contact stuff and we fought pretty much full contact back in those times. But I wanted to do something that was a little more real and also do something productive with it. You know, I didn't want to just go out and hurt people. I wanted to do something that was actually good for the community. And so I got into doing that type of work, and it really changed me as a martial artist and gave me some background and information on things. And so, yeah, there's not a whole lot about me. There's kind of a period of time in my life that's sort of undocumented, if you will. But when I got in with doing, working with these guys, you know, my background in martial arts and some of the things that I had done, gave me a sort of a unique perspective, because there's so much martial arts and action stuff in Hollywood and knowing how those things are actually done for real, you know, how you fire a full auto machine gun, how you actually handle pistols and knives and things like that and actual situations, gave sort of an interesting spin and interesting perspective on what happens.
So we're not going to get the Christmas Eve story.
Anyway, yes, Jason, you are.
Are you?
I'll tell you. I was there.
All right. Go ahead.
All right, there are times. every now and again, there's the guys who do the grunt work and they do the investigation and all that fugitive recovery. Every now and again, you just need a bunch of bodies. Mm-hmm. So I would help James out occasionally. Like I said, we had the same Kung Fu teacher and he knew my skill set. So we were working with another group. We'd finally tracked down this guy, Daniel. It was Daniel something. And it was my first fugitive apprehension. I caught Daniel, and we found him in this hiding out in this truck stop up near the West Virginia border at about like 11 o'clock Christmas Eve. And I took him down and cuffed him and all that stuff. Yay. And felt a little bad about sending somebody to jail on Christmas. But then I looked at his bail piece, and his mother had signed her house over as collateral for his bail, and dude was going to skip out and leave his mom homeless. I was like, screw this guy, send him to jail. But so that we finished that earlier than we expected. There was another guy that was on our list that it should have been a real simple pickup. He was his roommate had signed for his bail, and then he found out the guy was in for some sort of sex offense and decided he didn't want to do that. So he got the bail back, and we're just supposed to stop by and pick him up. Well, we go to the guy's house. He wasn't there. He said he went out to a bar, and we're like, well, okay, the bar is closed. It's Christmas morning by this time, like 1 a.m. And we're like, well, you know, the bar's closed in an hour. You know, right on the other side of the county line, there's this 24-hour sex shop. And slim chance that he'll be there. He is a sex offender. But we got to kill an hour We'll go see if he's there. If not, we'll come back in an hour and pick him up. And we can certainly entertain ourselves for an hour at the 24-hour sex shop, right? So we go over the county line and we go to this 24-hour sex shop and we walk in. And the first thing that strikes, you know, I've been around, I've seen a few things. The first thing that strikes me is dude has decorated for Christmas, right? The snow's gently falling outside. He's got stockings hanging up. There's tinsel, there's trees. As soon as you walk in, you're confronted by a big, fancy glass punch bowl full of eggnog. Free eggnog in the 24-hour sex shop. No, thank you. We passed on that. So we're sort of,
you get this stuff.
Looking around. You know, we went back and checked the booths and everything, and dude wasn't there. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm a curious sort. I'm looking around. I've seen some stuff, you know, but there's things I'd never seen before. And the one that stands out in my mind was there was a product called the Trucker's Buddy, which was a what they would now call a fleshlight. If you guys know what that is, it's a thing that you put your penis in. And
I've been to a truck stop or two in my time. I've seen it.
Yeah. And it plugs into the cigarette lighter of your car.
Turn left at Albuquerque. I don't remember this on the show.
So anyway, they have this Trucker's Buddy, and you know, there's this picture of a dude that looks like he's just like laid back in the front seat like a male model with a Trucker's Buddy plugged in. And I'm assuming he's, you know, I'm not even going to imagine where he is that this is plugged in. But anyway, so we're sort of looking around and getting ready to go and whatever. And then as we walk out, I notice dude has actually done two big scrolls with calligraphy of like gifts for him and gifts for her, and has like top 10 suggestions. And number 10 on gifts for him was the Trucker's Buddy. And I could not stop laughing because I got around to the idea. I was just imagining this Norman Rockwell Christmas morning where they're like unwrapping it. And, oh, look, honey, how did you know? Just what I wanted. The Trucker's Buddy. Santa says you've been good this year.
Trucker's Buddy. Was that your Christmas gift that year?
Come on, Jason, show us your Trucker's Buddy. We know you got it right around there.
We I think Jason circled back later and picked one up, actually.
I don't doubt that. Well, James, let me ask you a couple questions about the show. Why did it take so long?
Because then we got to run.
Because I noticed, based on the movies you were referencing with the stars, and also the slate when you interviewed Michael J. White, that you taped these, I'd say 2008, 2009. Am I correct?
Some of them.
Some of them. Yeah. And see, you know, the funny thing about it was when we started into this, the format that we were using, there was a couple things that happened. One of which is the format that we were using. It's a really modern format. We were a little ahead of our time in the way that we shot it. Because if you're looking at the cinematography and basically our run and gun style and that sort of thing, it looks really, you know, like something you'd see now. And so we were a little ahead. And so when we were shopping it, you know, people were looking at it and they were like, oh, well, this is cool. But, you know, they weren't quite getting it. And, but the other thing is that, you know, after the recession, there was a big drought in the TV industry. Mm-hmm. And, so there was a time that a lot of shows didn't come on because the networks were basically supporting their tentpole shows, and so there was a little bit of a drought there, and so you know we all had other projects going on, and so we were like, you know, this is a great show, but maybe it's not the right time for it, and we had a lot of other things going on, and so we were like, well, you know, we'll come back to it at some point. And there was this great company out of the UK called Bazooka Bunny. And Bazooka Bunny is an amazing British company that does lots of interesting things. And Jason did a project with them and he showed them the show. And he's like, hey, check this out. You know, something I did a little while back. And they saw it and they were like, what in the world, man? This show's great. You know, this show needs to be out. People need to see this. And so we were like, well, you know, if you guys, you know, want to work with us on the project and get the show out, you know, that'd be great. And they did. They went in and they re-edited everything, and they packaged it and helped get it out and helped place it with Tubi. And so really we have Bazooka Bunny to thank for that. And so now we're looking at shooting season two of that. And so, yeah, it's been a little while back. Right. But you know, we've been planning for this for a while. So we've got stuff that's just going to blow people's minds for season two, and a lot of really, really cool stuff because we've had a while to think about it. But,
I don't mean to say that it looks dated, because it doesn't. The editing is very modern. Yeah. It's just when you watch it, you're like, wait a second, you know, just sort of just the references. And then when I had to freeze frame the slate at the Michael J. White, and I was like, oh, okay, I see it. But it was just you and Jason were the hosts. How did Michelle Lee come on? And then we're going to talk to Anthony, and that'll take about 20 minutes. But and it'll be great stories. But how did Michelle Lee – and Michelle Lee, Nicole, is a very accomplished stunt woman. She's the other co-host. Unfortunately, she's not here. I'd love to talk to her. She's been various parts of Caribbean movies, Suicide Squad. She's been great. She's a great swordswoman. She's terrific, and she outdoes the men on a lot of these stunts.
Yeah, and she is fantastic. And we met her, you know, it was early on, you know, and she was very interested in the project, and we actually brought her on as a not only a host but also a producer on the show. She helped us to arrange for talent for the show. And helped us line up. She actually lined up Michael Jai White for his interview, and Holland Diaz and several other people. And she was a great resource for us and super fun. I mean, Michelle's great. Everybody loves her, and she's beautiful and talented, and she is an amazing martial artist. She's legit. She's a legit martial artist. And you know, fantastic person. And so when we did the same thing, we interviewed her, and then it was like, hey, you know, is this something that you'd be interested in participating in? And she was kind enough to say, yeah, you know, this sounds like a lot of fun. And we had a lot of fun shooting. I mean, we had a great time shooting. And so that's how she got involved. And then she's been in so many big things. I mean, she was in Venom, and she was in Black Widow recently. Right. And
coming out,
she's busy all the time now. And so, but Michelle is very close to us, very dear to us. And she's been amazing to work with.
Well, her enthusiasm on the show is palpable.
Yeah.
You can see how giddy she is doing these stunts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And she legit beat us at the driving. She legit beat us. She was really good on the driving. I was certain I was going to win that. I got a little cocky, and she took me down a notch.
And she got to interview Bai Ling in a sauna, but
that was a weird deal. We had a location set up for that. And we go to shoot, and we lost our location, right? And so we legit were looking for a location, and we worked out the spa that was willing to let us come in and shoot there. And it's this beautiful place. So Bai Ling comes in, and she's just like, she's wearing a jacket, like an oversized jacket, and that's it.
It's like a man's double-breasted jacket.
It's a man's double-breasted jacket, and that's all.
I've been trying to get Bai Ling on the show for a long time. I know a lot of people that know her, and she's a great actress, beautiful, a touch eccentric.
That's a polite way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, it was actually Michelle, you know, Michelle was going to do the interview, and Bai Ling was like, hey, we're in a sauna. Well, how about I just, you know, pretend like I'm getting at the sauna, and you just came out of the sauna, and you've got a towel on, and we're just sit down and talk like two girls. And
well, that was her idea.
Yeah. And we were all just like, okay. And so they set the cameras up and they shot it, and it was just like, well, all right. And they, you know, talk about some pretty interesting stuff. There was a lot that was cut from that interview that, you know, we'd need a different rating, I guess, to talk about. But yeah, Bai Ling's she's a very interesting person. And then afterwards, we went next door to some place and danced until, I don't know, till late in the night. And Byling's quite a dancer, too.
Where's she's cool. Byling comes as advertised. Everything you've heard is correct. She's awesome. She's a tad eccentric, as you say. James is talking about, you know, she shows up wearing that man's double-breasted jacket and nothing else. And he means and nothing else. She walked over and the sound guy comes in and he's got a, you know, micer and everything. And so he's trying to figure out where to put the lav, and she just hikes up her, you know, coat, and she's not wearing any underpants. And you see the sound guy.
Is that
guy
where he stuck the mic or what?
You can't put it there.
Yeah, the sound
be muffled.
The sound guy was like, and she's like, okay, maybe in the pocket or whatever. And so he's trying to figure out how to like wire this and not touch her. And she's standing there pantsless. And then when we went out dancing afterwards, it was just like, it was fun, but it was just like, she dances kind of like this the whole time, like even when the music is off. So you're just like, wow, this is fun. But yeah, she comes as advertised. I found the best thing to do in interviewing Byling, don't try to steer her in any direction. Just let her talk.
Right.
And whatever she's going to say is much more interesting than whatever you were going to have.
No, I was on a radio show with her. That's I can attest to that. But Anthony, how did they get you to co-host the show? Because I know they went up to the ranch and, you know, you were a featured stunt guy, you know, one of the most accomplished stunt guys ever. How did you become a co-host?
Well, they asked. I started as an actor. I started in, I'm still an actor. I've always been an actor. I started in Shakespeare at the Old Globe Theater in San Diego. I played Iago twice. There's not a lot of stunt guys who can say that. And I think it's why, you know, when I am wearing that particular hat, my choreography is that much more effective, because I believe action has to drive story and articulate character. And it is another layer of credibility to whatever role it is that you're playing.
But I started martial arts when I was 13. And I started out doing kung fu and was very wushu-y at the time, which is sort of kung fu gymnastics. And, you know, I can spin, I can kick, I can do splits, I can do all that stuff. I just am not a jumper. I can't jump very high. So I found I was better at showing off with sticks and stuff than I was trying to jump up and do two flips and land in a split. So I just sort of naturally went that way. And then it's just interesting. There's you know, I majored in history in college. I double majored in English and history. I'm virtually unemployable. But to me, weapons are interesting at this point from a historical perspective, in that you can learn a lot about the culture and about the times by looking at the weapon and what it was designed to do and what it does. Right. And I'll go off on a weird sidebar here, and Anthony's much more qualified to talk about this than me, but I always thought if I ever pursued a master's degree, I've had a few ideas of things to do, but I thought if I ever pursued a master's degree, just for my own edification, I would do the fact that Japanese sword technique and German longsword is probably 85% identical, even though they developed separately thousands of miles apart. Because there's only so many ways you can swing a pointy piece of steel.
Right.
And plus, I just love the idea of, you know, defending my thesis. And there's all these, you know, academians sitting there with their tweed coats and whatever. And I'm, you know, swinging things around, chopping stuff in half while I'm explaining it. I think I'd make them soil their tweed. So I look forward to that. It would do nothing good for my career to actually, I mean, it gains me no benefit to have a master's degree at this point. Well, but I might do it just for fun at some point.
It's kind of fascinating. Well, my father sells collectible knives and razors and really? Things. So it is something that I'm around and that interests me. And that's why I was going to ask, what's the most exotic piece of weaponry you own?
Oh, I got a few.
That would be the trucker's buddy.
Besides the trucker's
buddy. Oh God.
The story that he told off the air that we all heard, and everybody can vouch for me, is that he's a master of the bullwhip, as you'll see on the show. He said that Michelle Pfeiffer was better than any of the stunt women on the bullwhip.
Oh, wow.
And was a treat to you know, to work with, and just took to it just naturally. Jason, on the show, I don't want to spoil it, but you get a little bullwhip action. How scary was that?
Well, again, perhaps bravely, perhaps foolishly, you know, I like to volunteer for things. And Anthony, my favorite was when he asked me to hold the wine glass out, and he cracked and wrapped my wrist, and then he cracked and he broke the wine glass, and then drank the wine out of it. It was all very elegant, and plus with whips. So I don't know, somehow that was classier than just guzzling Merlot on the mountaintop.
He was drinking out of a broken glass, and you were drinking out of a bottle. I don't mind. Savage.
Yes. Like I said, I trust Anthony. I don't think it made it to the final edit, but one of the things that we did was I intro'd a segment when he was throwing tomahawks, and I was just standing there, and they boom, boom, boom next to me. And then he walks up and he says, "What a trusting soul you are." And I was like, "Well, you said you knew how to do this." But again, you know, I've been doing martial arts for years, so you get kind of used to some weird stuff.
What were you going to say, James?
Well, you know, you'd ask how Anthony came on the show, and basically, you know, when we got up there, and I didn't really know that much about his martial arts background, and Jason knew some, but we didn't know the extent of it. And so we talked to him about movies and all the stuff he's been in and whatever. And then we start talking about martial arts, and I was happy to find out that his martial arts skill was really exceptional. And so we were able to do stuff on camera. You know, there's this one segment with the bullwhip where he's utilizing it like a dozen different weapons, and he's tying me up with it. He's throwing me with it. He's, you know, using it like nunchucks. He's, you know, doing all this crazy stuff that nobody's really ever done with the bullwhip before. And, you know, we actually spent quite a lot of time working on weapons training up there at Rancho Andalo. And it's been interesting because it kind of turned into a laboratory for us. And then Anthony actually introduced me to cold steel. You mentioned, you know, knives and things. And so Anthony and I started working together with cold steel, and we did a lot of the knife and sword testing and cutting for their videos for years. And actually more people know me from that than just about anything else. I found one guy in Portugal actually recognized me from the cold steel videos of us testing their weapons. And so it was a treat for us to be able to get in with somebody that had sort of the width of knowledge, both practical and entertainment knowledge that Anthony had. And so we snatched him up and got him on the show because of that.
I don't blame you. Now, Jason, we were talking about the, go ahead. You were going to say,
I was going to say, with Anthony, everything else aside, I mean, you can talk about his skill. You can talk about his experience. You can talk about his bullwhip, but we just hit it off is the most important thing. I mean, James and I both have martial arts background. Anthony's a martial arts guy. Michelle's a martial artist, but we just clicked with Anthony. Like when we rolled up there, it was a real kindred spirit, and we became friends fairly quickly. And at some point it just seemed obvious we have to have him on the show. We just really, really vibed. Everyone we see, most people we film, it usually takes about 2 hours to shoot something. We were up at Anthony's the first time that we met him. We shot for 8 hours, I think. And we just kept talking and vibing, and he'd show us this and he'd show us that, and let's get the horse out and then let's do the whip. I don't know if he was just bored or what, but you know, we just clicked instantly. And I remember 8 hours specifically because I had only casually been introduced to his wife, Dr. Mary DeLonges. And she was, while we were doing all this, fixing their bathroom. And I was there 8 hours guzzling energy drinks. And I didn't know him well enough at that point to ask if it was okay to pee in the yard. And his wife was in the bathroom the whole time. Yes. So I just held it for 8 hours until we were heading down the hill. Geez. And I was like, pull over. And as soon as we got around the corner, I jumped out and it was like, fire hose action. But yes, now since then, you know, we've become great friends, and I can just pee in the yard. So that's
awesome.
That's fine. That's when you know you have a good friendship. It's kind of peeing in your
Yeah.
Now, I was to get back to the question. What was your what's your most exotic weapon that you have in your collection?
Well, it's a bit of a hat on a hat, but I've got I have something no one else has. As I said, my father was a hairdresser his entire life. Let me say that again. My father was a hairdresser his entire life, but he was a metalsmith. He would kind of tinker around and weld things and stuff like that and do little projects. And every now and again, I would dream up something odd and he would make it for me. Well, I had a three-sectional staff, which is basically triple nunchucks, nunchucks with three pieces. And I got this idea of putting spear tips on them. And he actually made a fleur-de-lis spear tip. So it's a three-piece staff with two razor-sharp spearheads that have three spearheads on it. And usually when I perform, I think I'm the only person in the world that does this. When I perform for Chinese New Year or something, I'll come out, again, guzzling an energy drink. Let's keep talking sponsors. And I'll slice that open to show the audience that it's sharp. And then I'll spend, you know, 2-3 minutes twirling the thing all around my body and hopefully not slicing myself to ribbons. So I've got a few other, you know, odds and ends, but to my knowledge, I'm the only person that does spear tip three-sectional staff in the world. And if there's someone else that does it, I'd like to meet him because I'd like to compare technique.
That's great. Now, since your father was a barber, was did he collect razors too or no?
No, not really.
My dad does, and he's not. So anyway, but get back to the show. One of the things, Nicole, that you'll see on the show is they have I didn't write down his name, the motorcycle guy.
Motorcycle Monty Perlin.
Yeah.
Say that name again. I'm sorry.
Monty Perlin. He's one of the best in the business. Yeah.
Monty Perlin. Now, and the stunts that you guys did with Monty Perlin, I can't, the globe especially.
Well, of course. Why would you not?
There's a big metal globe, and he can drive the motorcycle up the side and all this with Jason standing in the middle.
Yeah, well, how are you going to not do that? You know, the guy brings out, he has this big elaborate cage. It's like a...
It's like a 12-foot cage.
A globe, but you get inside it. And yeah, and he drives, he rides the bike so fast that he can actually do loops upside down and spin around, and you just volunteer to stand in the middle. So, like, how could you not? If somebody says, you know, I'm a motorcycle expert and I want you to stand in the middle of the globe of death while I ride a motorcycle around you, are you going to go, no, no thanks. I'll just stand over here. Of course you do that.
And how hard was your heart pumping at the end of that?
Oh, front row at a concert.
And James, didn't he run you over or hit you?
It was
nice.
Yeah, he wanted to do a stunt that he had never done before on film. And he asked if I could take a fall from being hit from the front wheel. So basically he would do like a wheelie and come up and hit me with the front wheel. And then I would take a fall, actually being struck by the wheel and flip. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we rehearsed it once and then shot it and turned out great on camera. And then he ran over me with the motorcycle,
which was fun. That's awesome.
But yeah, but he is a real perfectionist with what he does. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of people that I would trust to do something like that, but his skill on a motorcycle is amazing. The stuff that he can do, you know, just wheelies forever and just, you know, all kinds of amazing stuff. That segment is really cool. There's a lot of really
it's great
stuff in that.
Because initially it looks like he really hit you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he did actually, you know, touch, and, you know, just his timing and my timing were just right. And so, yeah, it's a convincing stunt.
Yeah, this is the type of stuff you'll see on the show. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, that's one thing that you mentioned earlier about, Anthony talked about protecting your opponent and, you know, letting Anthony take things out of my hand with the whip and letting Monty do this. I found when you get around stunt people that are real pros, guys that have been doing it for years, top tier, they would never, ever ask you to do something unless they were confident that it's within their skill set. They're not going to be out there just half-assing and hoping it works. These guys are pros. Right. So you feel, you know, it's always a little nerve-wracking, but if you're working with pros, you don't have to worry. They're not going to do anything that's going to hurt you, you hope.
Case of point, when James made a homemade Wolverine claws, and you had the guy who taught Hugh Jackman how to fight in Wolverine, he comes in with the claws. The guy's like, we don't use those. We use like plastic. We use aluminum.
Well, that worked out better than it should have. I actually went to all the trouble. It was maybe Halloween was a few weeks before or something. I went down and bought costume Wolverine claws for James to do that with. And then we get over to wherever we're going to film. And I was like, oh, darn, I left him in the luggage. I'm like, you jackass, what are we going to do? And next thing he's like, oh, okay, wait a minute, I have an idea. And next thing you know, I'm inside like kind of vamping, doing the interview. I have no idea James is out there like crafting Wolverine claws. He comes in, I'm like, how do you even know how to do that? Like, dude, why is that a thing?
I can make a weapon out of anything, man. Wolverine claws, no problem. No problem. But yeah, that was
literally, he just like ran around the corner to the hardware store and he comes back and he's got Wolverine claws. I'm like, dude, that's insane.
Yeah, that was a fun segment. That was a lot of fun. You know, Wolverine's one of my favorites, you know, and so getting to work with those guys was really cool. And they built out the segment that we do in that piece is actual choreography from the film. And so we're doing the actual
great on camera.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're doing the choreography, Jason Sabretooth with his hair flying everywhere. And I'm doing the Hugh Jackman part. And, so it was a tremendous amount of fun doing that. And again, you know, the claws, because we had to improvise, they were actually sharp, you know? And so, but Jason and I've worked so much together that he knew that, you know, even if it was a little dicey, that I was going to watch out for him.
Yeah, Jason kind of looked like Sabretooth from Josie and the Pussycats, but that's a whole other thing. That's a whole other thing.
Stop him before he sub.
I'm insulting.
Stop him before he sub references again.
I'm insulting a black belt who's written for Black Belt Magazine and wrote a book about MMA fighters, 21st century warriors, and could probably take a finger and take me right out. Oh, I'm kidding, Jason.
want to hear something funny?
Why not?
This just happened the other day. I wrote that book, I think in 2009.
Right.
Black Belt Magazine calls me up and they said, they're always fun. I get these odd calls from Black Belt periodically. And they called me up and they said, we did a book 30 years ago called 20th Century Warriors. And we would like to do a new version of that. We're going to call it 21st Century Warriors, and it's going to be about MMA fighters. Would you like to do it? And I said, no, thanks. I'm really busy right now. I appreciate the offer, but I don't have time for that. And they said, we can offer you $1,000 advance. And I went, yes, because I happened to need money right at that moment, you know, the life of an actor. So I took the advance. Then I was obligated to write the book. Well, it sold pretty well, as books do. And, as books do, I got every 6 months I would get a residual check. Well, the first 6 months I got, it was like $600 or something. And then the next was $600. Not enough to quit your job over, but it's nice every now and again, you go to the mailbox and you're like, ooh, $600. And then it was 400 and then it was 200 and then it was 100. And as we've stretched more than a decade now, every 6 months I get a residual check for that book for roughly $1.80. And Wells Fargo wants $8 to cash it. So I've just been keeping them. I thought I might do an art display or something, but there's actually a bar, you know, that happens with actors too. I was up at Anthony's place and he was showing me one of the residual checks he got for Batman Returns was like $20 or something. And there's a bar called Residuals. I don't know if you guys have been there. I think it's up in NoHo.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes back to the, you know, Sinatra days of Hollywood. An actor can bring in and you can get a rail drink for if you just give them one of your crappy residual checks and they pin it up on the wall. So I've just been sort of saving all these to go out on a rail drink binge one.
I've been there. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
21st Century Warrior residual checks. Yeah. So that's on my horizon for as soon as everything reopens. I'm going to go and use my crappy crappy residual checks and get hammered.
Well, we've been talking for an hour and a half, and I could go forever. You guys are great. Why Lou Ferrigno of the Incredible Hulk is featured on the show? You guys do a shoot with him, but you don't interview him. Why?
That was a target of opportunity. I was writing an article for Inside Kung Fu. That grew out of, I was sitting up again at 3 a.m. reading. I'm a night owl and I read. And I was reading some back issues of Defenders magazine, like from the Defenders comic book from the 70s, which featured the Hulk.
Right.
And they had an Avengers Defenders crossover and a few really great covers where the Hulk was fighting Thor. And I just had this moment where I was like, well, I kind of look like Thor. I wonder if I could get Lou to come and we could recreate these photos, but Kung Fu style. You know, we would recreate the 70s comic book covers, but Kung Fu style. And I reached out and I talked to Lou. I actually talked to his wife, who handles all his business. And she said, yeah, Lou thinks that's cool. So we came down and we're just doing an Inside Kung Fu photo shoot. And we hadn't really scheduled an interview or anything. We just decided, what the hell? We're here. This looks awesome. Let's film it. So hopefully we're going to get back and do an interview with Lou in season 2.
Yeah.
Oh, but let me tell you, the one thing I think was funny, though. Let me talk. And then I'll hang off. No, I just have to say this before it gets away. I'm sensing an energy drink theme here because I'm going to reference. At one point, I went off on a segue there. Lou and I are doing our thing, and Lou is huge. I'm 6'1", and I came up about to his chin. He was not the Hulk for nothing. He was Hulk-sized, and they just painted him green. So at one point, we're in this thing, and Lou reaches down, and he puts his hand around my throat. And I'm not kidding you, his fingers touched in the back. And the photographer looks at me and goes, now, look like you're scared, or pretend like you're scared. And I said, dude, I don't have to pretend. Oh, dear God. But so, yeah. Anyway, that was that. James, I'm sorry, you were going to say?
Well, and the other thing was, you know, when we were going to shoot that, we were like, not everything has to be like a setup interview for us too, because one of the things that we were doing is we were sort of being avatars for fans that want to see what it's like to go behind the scenes and see things. Mm-hmm. And so we had this photo shoot, you know, for a magazine shot in a really cool location. And, you know, we kind of wanted to keep it like that, you know, because to keep that energy and, you know, because it's a real high energy segment on the show and there's people running around, there's cameras going off and there's costume changes and everybody's running around. And it would kind of, you know, to have a setup and sit down interview would kind of crash that energy. And it was like, and that's, you know, we wanted that to be more of an experience piece, you know, and there's a whole piece with Jason leading up to it where he's, you know, he's worried about, you know, how he's going to look on camera versus Lou Ferrigno, you know, and, you know, is his muscles going to be big enough that he just doesn't look like, you know, a little kid next to him or something. And
before we go, I did want to ask both of you guys, if somebody were to want to become a stuntman, and I'm sure people here are listening, I'm sure more people are listening than want to become stuntmen than have read Alan Quatermain novels. But if anybody wanted to become a stuntman, how would you get into it? What would your advice be if somebody wanted to get into it?
James, you want to field this first, or shall I?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's hard to come into it without some skill set. And, you know, that skill set could be gymnastics, it could be dancing, it could be martial arts, it could be, you know, circus stunts, sideshow stuff. But you really should probably try and come into it with some skill set. And it's good to have a specialty. It's really good to be, you know, known for something. Like Anthony is known for the bullwhip. He's known to be a sword master. it's really good to have that sort of in your pocket. Now, although Anthony can do anything in the world, he is arguably the world's best guy and with a bullwhip, you know, and he's arguably one of the best swordsmen in the world. And so when you have those kind of credentials, it's not too hard to get work, you know, and otherwise you're just sort of competing out there with everybody. So, but you'll find a lot of people in stunts have something like that in their back pocket when they're starting. So that's where you really want to begin. And it's not enough to just be a daredevil. It's not enough to be an adrenaline junkie. You have to have some kind of skill to go along with that. Now, being an adrenaline junkie helps. Right? It helps. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's about, can you do what you're doing without it turning into a horrendous accident? And that's where the skill comes in.
I will say I can at least speak intelligently to Los Angeles. The stunt community there is fairly tight knit. Everybody knows. And if you're wanting to do this on the Hollywood level, go out, you know, you have to do some low budget films at first, but meet some people and get plugged into that. And, you know, schmooze a little bit, meet the stunt people. Once you get into that circle, well, there's several places where they all get together a couple times a week to train. Mm-hmm. And then you got to get and you train with them and you pay your dues. It's like anything else. You know, it's sort of like the equivalent of when I first started working in restaurants. You know, I started out as a dishwasher, and then I was a dishwasher and a busser, and then I was a host, and then finally I was a waiter, and then I was an assistant manager. Once you get around that community and they get to know you and they start to like you and trust you more and more, then you can kind of get plugged in and you can do your training and start working your way up. But there's no substitute really for just going out, meeting the people and doing it.
And I'll say this, the stunt community are some of the nicest, most genuine people that you'll ever meet. They're just fantastic folks. And they're genuine people, and they're really interested in being nice and helpful, and they're just salt of the earth, fantastic people.
It's interesting too, because there's a parallel. I've said before that, you know, martial arts and film fighting and stunt work are not the same thing, but it's a parallel skill set. You know, there's similarities and there's some crossovers. And someone like Anthony and hopefully me and James can do both, but mm-hmm. It's not just one thing. It's two things that run parallel. I have learned in my martial arts background that the people that are really, really, really skilled tend to be friendly and relaxed and very secure and very helpful and genuine folks. It's what we call paper tigers that are the insecure assholes that you have to, you know, they're always worried about this, worried about that. What if, you know, and just walk around the chip on the shoulder. In stunt world, it's the same thing. These guys have got zero to prove. They are the biggest badasses in the world. You know it. They know it. So they're friendly. Come on in, kid. Let's talk. Oh, what can I do to?
Let's do lunch. But that's a whole other subject. What? How much fun was this, Nicole? We could talk all night.
Yes, we could. Yeah.
But I encourage everybody to if you don't have Tubi, get it, because they have great movies on there, great TV shows, and they have Star Stunts action on it, and I can't recommend it enough. I told my dad about it, and if you are an adrenaline junkie, you want to see what's going on behind the scenes, it's amazing. It's a fun show. You can binge watch it in 2 hours, and there's no lulls. You know, there's no reality show BS and drama. It's just action, and Jason, James, thank you so much for being on. Let everybody know how they can find you on social media and everything else you got going on.
Yeah, James Dean Houston at Instagram, and that's the best way.
Oh, just look me up on Facebook, Jason McNeil. I'm on there. I haven't got an Instagram yet. I think I'm a bit of a technological Luddite. I keep being told I should, but. Yeah, just find me on Facebook, Jason McNeil. There's me, and there's, I think I'm the only one who's not a comedian or a mortician, so I should be easy to find.
Yeah, that's a Facebook full of both. And Nicole, you're Nicole Six Books on Instagram.
Please find me and add me. I'll follow you back.
And Nicole H Six on Facebook. And if you need your social media to get an upgrade.
Oh yeah, I can help you make easily a couple of thousand new fans within a year. And we're talking real fans, not like buying 1,000 fans. I'm talking people that'll actually like the work and invest in it and will click on your stuff and comment and will be real people, not robots.
And follow me on Goth Comedian on all social media. Watch Star Stunts in Action. You will like it. And thank you, Jason. Thank you, James. Thank you, Anthony, who's probably just finishing dinner right now. And everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.